Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone. This is Melissa Bilardi, your host on Help for HD. We are online, live, and podcasting all about Huntington's disease every Monday. Our goal is to introduce incredible guests to inspire, educate, and inform you all about what's going on in our HD world, and we are recording for later listening. We give special thanks to Lundbeck, Inc. for bringing us Xenazine, the first drug for chorea associated with Huntington's disease, and for supporting Help for HD. Your generosity allows us to keep broadcasting. Also, thanks to Blog Talk Radio and Citizens Broadcasting for providing this format. We would not have a show without you. You are most welcome to call into the show to ask questions on two phone lines, 310-982-4227, and our toll-free is 877-497-4103. You may also send me an email at helpforhd@yahoo.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming shows. Our special guest tonight is Dr. LaVonne Goodman. She is an internist and patient advocate who was wildly successful in recruiting HD patients for a Seattle clinic. Her husband passed of HD at age 36. Since then, she is a woman on a mission to educate and advocate for our cause. The work she is doing for us is so very important. Our HD world needs to know she's out there researching and publishing in a comprehensive format. Her website is hddrugworks.org. Welcome to the show, Dr. Goodman. How are you today?
I'm very happy to be here and salute you for starting this project, this blog radio, and having so many listeners for very positive things in Huntington's.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're going to talk about clinical trials and research and some other things today. Can you explain to our listeners the need for clinical trials? What are the different types and how important it is to have clinical trials?
Well, without clinical trials, we will have no new treatments. And we have so few that are, and only one that's specific for Huntington's, we will never have new ones unless we step up to clinical trials. And that's why it's so important. Huntington's will always be the same if we don't do clinical trials.
Right. And how do we go about educating our public, our people, about clinical trials and who should be doing the clinical trials?
Well, I don't think there's one specific way to do it. Whatever works in your community. It's done from a national perspective at HDSA's convention where they talk about clinical trials, and there will be working group sessions that people can attend. You can read about it on the Huntington's websites, the government websites. You can read about what clinical trials are out there and can localize them to the nearest center that's conducting the trial.
So it needs to be a localized kind of a trial.
Well, I think the best way to recruit, it's my bias, the best way to recruit is local. I think people are more swayed by someone they trust in their community telling them about clinical trials and communicating where they are and how they can be helped to get there. So there are different ways to do it, but I think the most successful really is at the community or your local level.
And that's how you did your recruiting.
Yes, that was my bias.
Right. Now, what are the different types of clinical trials? And don't you have lists on your website also of the different trials? There are different types of trials.
I do, and so do the other Huntington's websites. It's not unique to mine by any means.
Mm-hmm.
The different kinds of or types of clinical trials really relate to what you're trying to find out. There are observational studies, and we'll talk about a few of those later, that are not related to testing a drug, but are related to being able to test a drug faster in the future. So it's related and it's important, and it can help the person in that particular study because it will help get drugs out there faster for everyone.
Right.
To learn what we can from our observational studies. When a drug is first tested in people, you know, a new drug is used for the very first time, that's the phase one trial. Mm-hmm. And when RNA interference trials begin, that will be a phase one trial, an early trial to really test what the drug does in a person, not whether it helps the disease.
Oh, okay.
You're trying to make sure it's working at the place you want it to work, that it's getting into the brain. So you're really testing the drug, not the drug for the disease. Does that make sense?
Okay. I think so. So the efficacy of the drug?
No.
No.
I didn't explain that well.
Okay.
When a drug is used the first time in a person, the investigators need to know that the drug is absorbed, you know, gets into your system, and then also gets into brain.
Okay.
They need to know how fast your body gets rid of it.
Okay.
Because you'll need to establish all of those things before you put it into a clinical trial, either for safety or for efficacy. Now, phase one is very important, too.
Right.
Even though it's not testing the drug.
Right. So do you have a different format for phase one than you would have for phase two and different groups of people? Or
in phase one, there are no placebos.
Uh-huh.
Again, you're testing, you're trying to find out more about the drug.
Okay.
Not whether the drug is helpful. And, of course, you want it to be safe because it's being used in people for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're very careful. Many times people are hospitalized for this phase of the trial because
mm-hmm.
they check blood work and urine and scanning tests to learn more about where the drug is and what it's doing in terms of its metabolism or how the body gets rid of it.
So how it's metabolized.
Incorrect.
Okay. And there's a blood barrier, a blood-brain barrier?
Right. That's one of the big, big problems in Huntington's is that we can get drugs into our bloodstream, but it won't cross into brain.
Mm-hmm.
There's a physiologic or a biologic barrier there that is useful to keep out toxins in the brain, but it's unfortunate, makes it hard for drug developers to get things into brain.
Right. Wow, that's a whole nother show, isn't it? That's a lot of information to learn about. Now, you have used surveys and study groups in the past. How does that work?
I have used, in the first study that I did in Seattle in support groups, I surveyed about 100 people in support groups, and about how much they knew about clinical trials and if they were interested in them, about 20 questions or so, trying to get an idea of whether they would participate, what their limitations were, and what would increase their interest in clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years later, just this past year, the Huntington's study group incorporated and sent that survey out via the web for a much larger audience. And
mm-hmm.
I believe they will be publishing that in the next few months.
And what was that survey called? Do you
remember? Oh, dear. I forget. It was a, you know, I don't know the...
We won't know until the report comes back, correct?
Well, I'm sure there's a name. I just cannot recall it.
As far as the participation level, we won't know that until it's published.
There were several. There were, I believe, about 500 people who responded to that survey online, perhaps more. So it was a good number, but it was people who were reached by the web.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were key in getting some of that out.
Well, I helped with it. You know, I designed the survey. There was a focus group at the Huntington Study Group who refined it and made it better before it was sent out. So it's really a work of a lot of people, not just me.
It does take a lot of people, doesn't it?
Now, yes, makes the product better that way.
Yes. many hands make a little work, too.
Yes.
What is Track HD? Can you explain that?
Track HD is a very important observational study, one that's going to be integral to speeding up drug clinical trials. And this has been ongoing now for a little bit over 2 years. And what it does is it takes people who are gene positive but don't have clinical symptoms or don't have diagnosed Huntington's by motor signs, or and it also has people with early Huntington's symptoms, what we call stage 1 and stage 2. So fully capable ambulatory people who have symptoms. And they go up once a year for testing that's usually a day or a day and a half or so, depending on what their MRI schedules are. There's blood work. There is a lot of cognitive and motor testing. They are trying to find tests that are very sensitive to change. So they find the ones that give the biggest signal, which one is more often positive in this group of people, and also how quickly does it change. And they hone down on the ones that change more quickly and are more common to almost all of the people.
Yes, there's a lot of detailed information that needs to be
right. And they have found, they're finished with the 2 year analysis is still being worked on, but there are publications out that show that there are very sensitive markers that may be able to we can get the clinical trial time down maybe to a year or two, depending on how effective we think the drug will be. Compare that, to the 5-year trial duration of the present coenzyme Q trial.
Okay, so, now explain what a marker is, because maybe some people don't really know what exactly a marker is. What is determined by a marker?
Okay, there are clinical markers of Huntington's. Chorea is one of them, what a doctor or a person can see that defines or that is specific to a particular disease. For instance, in diabetes, there are blood tests, glucose and other blood tests that are markers of diabetes.
Right.
And that's not a clinical marker. A clinical marker is one that the doctor can see and do on physical exam. And then there are other tests that then one can correlate or that go along with the disease. And those can be blood tests or MRI tests. Those kinds of tests doesn't involve an exam of a patient, but an MRI can tell you what stage of disease a person is at, or can give a good idea of that. But it's what's very important for clinical trials, where they're not using that for diagnosis, of course. Important for clinical trials is they can measure something over time, and they want to find those things that change most quickly, and they did find that MRI was the most sensitive marker so far.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, now, you and I had discussed earlier about cohort and registry rolling into Enroll HD. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think this is one of the best things that's happened in the HD world in a while, because we cannot do clinical trials quickly unless we can find the people to be in them.
Right.
For instance, the recent ACR-16 trial that only had a duration or only lasted 3 months, took us almost 2 years to find all the people to be in the trial. And that was just 200 people, a little few more than that.
Yep.
So if we're to do clinical trials, we need to know where the people are and who can be called upon to be in specific trials.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, registry is the study that does this in Europe. In Europe, doctors can input patient-specific data into a registry, and their study is called registry. So many things can be done with that information. It can be used to identify people for clinical trials who might want to be in them, who fit criteria or fit what the trial is looking for.
So we have a broader base of participants to work from.
Right.
And information.
What has happened with, and the equivalent has been cohort in North America. Enroll is exciting because it's truly global. They're going to bring all of that information together and bring in both Asia and South America. So many more people around the globe to be identified to move clinical trials and treatments faster.
Oh, that's great. So we'll have a better shot at getting some more maybe drugs for our HDRs and treatments quicker that way.
Right, and what they can also do is they keep very good information about drugs that people are on,
mm-hmm.
so they can, after enough time and enough people are, they can identify on certain drugs, they can give trends on what drug might not be helpful. Maybe there is a drug out there that is actually harmful for Huntington's.
Mm-hmm.
Then we might be able to pick that up just by seeing how people do on this medicine over time.
Wow.
Without a clinical trial. It won't tell us for sure, but it'll give us an idea.
Great. Okay, let me break in here just for a second to let our listeners know you're listening to Help for HD. This is Melissa, your host, and our special guest tonight is Dr. LaVonne Goodman from HD Drug Works. And our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. We are recording live, and you can all listen to the show again. You may find Dr. Goodman at hddrugworks.org. Dr. Goodman, let's talk a little bit about a new website called HD Buzz.
HDBuzz.net. This is great. I recommend that everyone go to it. The writing is, it's science writing in language that's easy to understand. They also pick articles, select articles that have pertinence to Huntington's people. You know, it's not just a chemical reaction that's going on in a test tube. It is instead something that's closer to people and that is important to people and not just the scientist. So it's closer to what we want to know in terms of studies and drugs and treatments.
Right. Now, they announced the HD Buzz just launched, I think, on the 19th. And I'm excited about it, too, especially for the show, but also, you know, I have a support group that needs help with all this stuff, too. So
right, because the better educated we are, the more hope that we have. If we know what's happening,
right,
and then we can also participate in it, then we can empower the whole community much more. And HD Buzz, you know, I don't have to write scientific things for my website anymore because they do it better. And I can bring it to my support groups and such. So
everybody check that out, hdbuzz.net.
Great asset.
It's a great website that just launched. It's wonderful information in language that we can understand. let's talk about the treatment guidelines that you told me about, and that's going to be launched on PLOS, that's P-L-O-S.
Yes.
In March, maybe?
Well, we hope it's March. You never know exactly when these things will be, but that is the goal of the group. And what this is, as all listeners probably know, it's when it comes to treating Huntington's, most doctors don't know how to do it.
Right.
and the reason for that is because it's hard to find how to do it if you're a doctor. I learned this when I retired from internal medicine and now have a Huntington's clinic. How do I treat people with Huntington's disease? Where can I go to find this, the best information?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to find information, and there's a lot of disagreement about what best treatments are. So what this group did is we surveyed 60 experts, half from North America and half from Europe, to see what they did with each symptom.
Mm-hmm.
So to get an expert opinion, not of one person, but of a large group of people. And so we hope to come out with that summary in a month or two. It's the first three symptoms that were done, and that included irritability, which is a very important one. Well, they're all important, but
right. That
one's, I think, important because there's so little information on how to treat it.
Mm-hmm.
And perseverative or obsessional behaviors and chorea. The group wants to continue to do other symptoms like depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
In a later iteration or a later survey.
Okay. Go ahead.
And we hope that this will be published in this PLOS-HD, which is a site that you can go to and download the whole thing for free. You can also take it to your support group. You can take it to your doctor and let them know what this is, what the experts recommend. This is what they're doing. So hopefully it will even out treatment for those who can't make it to expert centers.
So this will be available to all physicians and medical professionals. And it's a treatment guideline for HD.
Right, for symptoms, yes.
For symptoms, irritability, perseverative, and chorea. And you mentioned that it's going to be in an algorithm type of a format so that they can plug into it and get the information out.
That's a way that doctors can quickly see what a pattern of drug use that's indicated for a certain problem. Huntington's very rarely has just one symptom, so it becomes a more complicated, and I would call it a recipe. An algorithm is a treatment recipe that a physician can look at. Now, that doesn't mean they have to follow it because each person's different, so it's not exactly like a recipe, but it gives you a good idea where to go and why.
And that's available for other conditions. I mean,
yes.
This is the first time that it'll be available for HD, is that correct?
Right. It is a very widely used way that doctors care for people with diabetes or with schizophrenia, for instance, many disease patterns, heart disease. We have algorithms that are what we call a standard of care, what the experts do.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be launched on PLOS. Is that Public Library of Science?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a part of PubMed, and it's the Public Library of Science. And what's nice about it is you can get more than the abstract. You can get the whole article for free.
Oh, that's great. And will that be also available to just lay people, regular people like me?
Yes.
Okay.
It will be certainly up on my website. I believe it will also be up on HDSA's website. So both physicians and patients' families can download this.
That information is going to be so important for people in kind of the outlying areas that don't have a center of excellence that, you know, easily accessible to the actual centers. We're dealing with doctors who have not really dealt with HD.
because most of Huntington's people do not go to centers of excellence. Most of them are taken care of by general physicians who haven't been taught how to treat this disease.
This is great. Great news. Getting back to some study information, what is the RESPOND HD study?
Well, that is a study that's completed that has had a couple of publications already. I reviewed one of them on the HDDW site, but it involves more than 400 people drawn from PREDICT, a study of pre-manifest or pre-symptomatic Huntington individuals who know that they are gene positive and have tested. And also another group, a smaller number, contributed to the trial, but from Pharos, a trial that is actually completed, where 1,000 people were followed for who had not tested, who had chosen not to test. So there were both people who were gene positive and people who were not, who were in this trial. And the response study was a questionnaire or trying to find out what kinds of discrimination or stigma they had been subjected to because they either were gene positive or knew that they belonged to an HD family, whether or not they had a gene positive or negative status. And so it was a survey study and also interview study. Some of the folks were interviewed as well, but the results published in the one I reviewed really was based on the survey.
And the result, your article that you posted on January 5th is on your website, hddrugworks.org. And it's very comprehensive and interesting information about personal, social relationships, insurance, medical, that kind of thing, employment. And it's all about stigma in Huntington's disease. And it's very interesting information. Now, you know, speaking of stigma, how do we overcome some of those stigmas in the workplace, with insurance? How do we get around that stuff?
Well, if I could answer that, I'd be the next Nobel Prize winner.
Right.
Stigma is very hard to overcome. It's not unique to Huntington's, of course, but we have several symptoms that make stigma more common in our disease. The emotional or mental illness part of it, the genetic component, the mental illness component, and also the chorea, very visible symptom that that someone just walking by on the street will actually be a little afraid of, will be uncomfortable with. So there's an avoidance of an avoidance of people, and that's a type of stigma. You
kind
avoid
of like
people.
A Tourette's. If somebody sees someone with Tourette's, they kind of turn and walk the other way.
That's
kind of a thing. Right. There's a wonderful article that Alice Wexler wrote, and she published it in The Lancet. It's called Stigma, History, and Huntington's Disease. And you all can Google that. It's a really wonderful article. We're getting ready to go off the air in 60 seconds, so I'd like to conclude our show with Dr. LaVon Goodman. We will continue to talk after we go off live, so you folks can log back in and listen to the archive show. But I want to thank you for joining us and thank Dr. Goodman for an awesome show. And you may email me at helpforhd@yahoo.com and Dr. Goodman at LaVonne, it's LAVONNE, at hddrugworks.org. And please click follow on this site for email reminders of upcoming shows. And we welcome your comments and requests for any additional information. And we thank everyone for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next Monday, same time, same place. And Dr. Goodman, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we hope to have you back on. And look forward to hearing about the treatment guidelines being published. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Well, thank you very much.
Great job. Yeah. So getting back to stigma, do you feel that, educating people and, promoting awareness of HD can help with that stigma?
But that probably isn't enough. Certainly awareness and education is important, but studies really in mental illness has shown that if you don't do more, you may actually increase stigma as you make people more aware of the differences from what they believe is normal.
Right.
And the only thing that has been shown really to benefit is to present positive images of the person who is affected.
Right.
And if you look at movies that depict Huntington's, it has been fairly negative until the last few years. With House, there was a positive depiction with a doctor. And increasingly, that is what the public needs to see, that they're not just bad things.
Right.
There are people who live with Huntington's very well for a long time and contribute to society as much as the next guy. And we need to show that and believe it in ourselves. Because a lot of stigma, someone else, stigmatizes us, but we do a lot of it ourselves. We think we're not a capable person because the next guy didn't think we were.
Right.
And we do have power to break through that internal stigma that holds us back.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show is because
exactly.
I wanted to put out positive information, education, awareness, and bring the positive side of HD to the forefront, because everybody that has HD in their family, they deserve that.
They do.
They deserve a positive way to live. They deserve to be treated just like anybody else. And one of the things I do want to talk about is I talked to you about how to treat depression early in HD and why it's important to treat early. And that's one of the major manifestations of HD from what I can see, and dealing with it in my family too, And how do you do that? How do you
help certainly
people?
Very common. Part of it is situational because it's a sad disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are good people who have it, but it's a sad disease and it limits our lives. So that is cause enough for depression. The disease itself makes it easier to be depressed. The biologic nature of how the Huntington's protein interacts with cells, there is more depression in people who are gene positive than people who are gene negative in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
But gene negative folks and spouses and care partners have depression too.
Mm-hmm. But it's more
and
situational.
It is not, it's
right.
All people deserve treatment for
right.
that, either medications or exercise. Things that can be done to improve our mood, and then we will live better. Treating it, if there's a problem that's limiting one's life and there are medicines out there to treat it, then we need to treat that early.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a doctor, I'm a pill pusher, but I would put SSRIs, antidepressants, in the drinking water for a lot of people. And, you know, we call them antidepressants.
Right.
But they treat other symptoms of Huntington's very well. They treat,
oh, okay.
it is the drug of choice for irritability. And
okay.
that is a very important one to treat early. Now, why do we wait till there is aggressive behavior or threatening behavior uh-huh. before we decide to that it needs to be treated?
Yeah.
We know that irritability is there a long time before there are aggressive behaviors.
Uh-huh. So
SSRIs are the
right.
primary, are the medication that treats this best early.
Uh-huh.
It also is the medication of choice for obsessive behaviors.
Uh-huh.
We shouldn't just call it an antidepressant.
Right.
Because it's very good for several symptoms that overlap in Huntington's.
Right. Overlapping symptoms. Oh, boy. Yeah.
And so we know that happens.
Yeah. So it's very important to treat early.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So that's a good point. Is there anything else that you can think of that we need to cover that we haven't talked about?
You had such a long list here. I'll review it. Well, I think we have covered most of them, believe it or not.
It's been a great show. I really appreciate you coming on. And, you know, we could probably talk for another hour about all this stuff. I'm going to have to close the show here in a minute. And if there's anything else that you can think of that you'd like to add to our listeners, I would just suggest that you go to hddrugworks.org and peruse the website. There's so much information on there and good stuff and well-written information. If you're curious about clinical trials and research and a care guideline should be on there soon, right?
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yes.
We're looking forward to that. I'm chomping at the bit for that one because, you know.
So am I.
My son has, I think, 8 doctors now that are not HD doctors.
Yeah.
I'd love to get my hands on that. So I'm looking forward to that. And if there's not anything else that we can think of right now, again, go to hdbuzz.net. That's going to be a good resource for everyone. And we've had a wonderful show.
Thank you. It's been fun talking to you as well.
Oh, thank you.
And enlightening, yeah.
Very good. And I'm hoping that we can have somebody from hdbuzz.net come on the show soon and talk to us about their launch.
Mm-hmm. That would be great.
All righty. Well, again,
Alrighty.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goodman. We've done a great show today, and I know there's going to be a lot of people that will come back and re-listen.
Okay.
So
well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and have a great day. Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.